Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. I have Ola back. I had such a great time last time speaking with you, Ola, and I just want you to be a recurring guest all the time. I have so many questions, but I wanted to dig into this topic of, you know, do women need men anymore? You know, after our conversation that we had the first time, I went into another podcast and it was all in Vietnamese, and my co-host, and, you know, he's released this on our podcast, so I don't mind resharing this, but he said that his 30-year-old son is having a really tough time dating. So I brought up your whole, you know, 146 question points and your process. And here we are. We're going to dive into this today. Thank you for coming back, Ola.
Thank you for having me back. And I was really looking forward to coming back as well. So thank you. It's really important question that you asked. And I think before I did my system, I definitely was ready to not find a guy anymore, because it had been 30 years of dating people that just weren't right for me. So I definitely was at a point where I was thinking, is there anyone right for me out there? And if my life is feeling so happy right now, do I really want to make it potentially worse by dating another person that's not right for me? So the calculations that went in were very much like, do I want to risk everything that I've built so far to finally be happy by myself, to now let somebody else in who might potentially just ruin it, right? Like, it's scary. And I think women, socioeconomically speaking, we are at a point where, you know, back in the day, marriage was a thing of economical convenience. There's a really interesting book called Modern Romance by Aziz Ansari, who got canceled at some point, I think.
But I think he's fine now. But yeah, he was canceled
now. But anyway, he wrote this book, which was very interesting. And it did dive into the history of love, which I'm obsessed with. Like, I really just love love, and I love connections, and I love relationships. So I read anything that's out there, from, you know, Simone de Beauvoir to this. And there was an interesting thing that that he mentioned, that back in the day, people would like marry people from the same building or the same neighborhood, you know, like the same village. And then if those single people ran out, they would then venture out further out into another village or into the city or whatever. So with the modernization of transportation, we have had an expansion into choice. And then with the internet, that expansion went further, right? So there was just so much choice into who we could be dating, who we could be marrying. And people used to marry to gain independence and gain some kind of economic freedom, right? Because you couldn't really leave the home as a woman if you weren't married, right? You were supposed to live at home until you would get married. So a lot of people would seek this freedom to be independent, and they would get married so they could just kind of leave and go and do their own thing. So women would need that, as well as need for money. And obviously, as times have changed and we're able to have our own careers, our own money, our own independence, it's completely fine for us to live outside of our homes, even if we're unmarried. Definitely there's a shift. And I think that was like a bigger global shift. And then, I guess it got to a point where we started realizing, do we need to be dating losers anymore? and I think, okay, and I'm not generalizing. I'm not saying most people or whatever. And I think the only thing that that phrase as a catchphrase, really, and there's an interesting relationship therapist that uses that phrase, is like, stop dating losers. And I think the main thing about that isn't that someone is a loser, is that you choose to be with someone who's just not right for you. And I think that's when it's a loser. It's not they are a loser. You actually are in a loser situation, right? Because you're losing out on being with the right person. So I think we are now becoming more aware, more conscious, more educated, more we get more financial freedom to go seek therapy, to understand ourselves more. So we get pickier, right? But it's not really picky. It's just for the first time we're able to articulate what our needs are and work on our childhood traumas, heal ourselves to get to a place where we know what we deserve. Maybe, you know, as some of the first generations of women that don't settle for things that aren't good for them anymore.
You know, I think everything also is compounded by our two cultures. We have the Vietnamese culture and then we have these Western cultures that blend, and the standards become even more concise and more, there's more clarity with when you bring all of this stuff into the mix. The standards of Asia become so like punched so up so high. And I think when I think about, you know, my dear friend's son, not dating, and you know, there's many millions of people today in their 30s that are not that have probably given up, or maybe not have given up, but don't realize like they have given up.
Yes, yes, yes. I think the fact that we have so much choice as well, it's so overwhelming, right? Like this comes from like the marketing playbook of Apple. Why is there only like 2-3 different computers to choose from, and why they sell much more than Dell? It's because, or at higher price points, it's because they give you the thing, they say, you need this, right? And there's not other choice. So there's no like choice paralysis. So I think when there is that much choice out there, it's also hard to stand out, because people will feel like, you know, okay, next, right? Like if it's not you, it's going to be somebody else. So I think there's also the downside of having that much choice, because I think when we had to choose within the village or choose within the town, you would spend a lot more time getting to know somebody, right? Which I think is what I did in my system, is before I discarded, you know, a choice, not a person, a choice, it was like, have I actually gotten to know who they are? And have I actually understood, do they fit what I'm seeking? Right. So I think there's that. But I think it's daunting. Dating is so daunting. Yeah. And I think we have generally the younger generation. I think you and I were on the like, cusp. We got lucky, right? We got lucky. Yeah, we were on the cusp of technology, and we still got to be the kids that were running wild on the streets, and no one would know where we were until 7 p.m. and it was dinner time, and we'd come home covered in mud, you know, having had the best day out with our friends. And then we would get computers, right? And it was dial-up internet. Things were slow. So we were online, but we weren't online all the time. And I think kids nowadays are online so much that it becomes really lonely out there, and social anxiety is so real. Like most people I know that are young are scared of making phone calls. Like I had to do, just actually 2 weeks ago, I had to do a pep talk for my brother's kid because she was going to have an interview on the phone. And she was like in full-on panic mode, like, oh my God, what do I say on the phone? Like, I've never done this. I'm like, well, just slow down, girl, because it's just a conversation. On the other end of this line, it's just a person. Just say hello, ask them how they are, and just breathe through it. But they get so much social anxiety about, you know, contact with people. And I get it, because I'm super introverted and I can spend a whole week without chatting with anyone and I'm super happy. And then I go out and I'm like, oh my God, when do I smile in this conversation? So I get that side. But I do think people that have grown up, you know, in this tech era, they just have never got that much practice with other people. So I think that on top of everything else that's happening, put the dating pressure on it. I mean, it's just daunting. It's a lot of things to get through, right? A lot of hurdles. So it's a lot easier to just be like, nah, whatever, right? I don't care. say that you don't care, because that's a nice defense mechanism, right? Because if you don't care, no one can hurt you. Or when someone wants to, tell me.
Yeah, me and my co-host and I were talking about, I was like, do you think your son really mm-hmm. wants to be mm-hmm. dating? He's like, yes, of course he does. And he's like, what human being doesn't want mm-hmm. to be touched, to cuddle, to experience that intimacy? So my question is, like, where do you go from here if you're, you know, at an age where you haven't dated your whole life? What do you do?
I think the first thing to do, and I think it's the right question you ask, and I guess that would be the question to ask him, is, do you really actually want to be in a relationship? Like, how badly do you want to be in a relationship? Do you really want to be in a relationship? And what is it that you are seeking in a relationship? Right? And what type of relationship do you actually want? Are you seeking a relationship that's more casual? Do you want to be in a relationship that leads to marriage? Like, what is it that you're after? And then I think it comes down to understanding self. Like, what is it that you're offering? What is it that you bring to the table, right, for the other person? And like, how realistic is it that the people that you're seeking are the right match for you?
I was just going to say that. What if we have a delusional person on this other end where you're asking all these questions and you're like, oh my God, you are completely delusional about the reality of the dating world?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? That delusion goes both ways. And it's very interesting because I have, my God, she's going to hate me. I'm not going to say her name, obviously, but I have this amazing, amazing friend. And this is like, she's such a baller. Like, I hope one day I grow up to be as cool as she is. This person, she married young, got divorced, had a 2-year-old kid, decided to move from Vietnam to the UK, got into an amazing MBA program, which she paid for herself while taking care of her 2-year-old son by herself.
Wow.
Like, got into an amazing job and then kept advancing, kept getting promotions, like recently bought a house in London, massive house in London, cash, you know, like, this is a high performing individual, right? Like, I am always in so much awe of her intelligence, her diligence, her hard work. And she is like, I can't find anyone because I have a kid. And I'm like, what do you mean you can't find anyone because you have a kid? Just find someone who wants to have a kid with you, right? Like, who will love your kid and who will, like, you having a kid is the least of your problems. The problem is that you don't think you're dateable because you have a kid. It's not that there's people out there who don't want you because you have a kid. It's because you don't believe people will want you because you have a kid, and therefore you don't even let the chance happen, right? And I'm like, if I was a dude, I'd be like, I'm going to date this girl. Like, she's amazing. And so I think that delusion, there's a good side of it, and then there's the bad side of it, right? Where there are people that think they, you know, could be getting all these types of people, and then maybe they're not working as hard on themselves to meet, you know, the maybe criteria that you need to meet to be dating certain people. Because it's not about someone being better than you. It's about really just matching, right? Like, matching on how hard you work, right? Matching on what things you value in life, right? Certain people value looks a lot. And if you're not working on looks, but the other person is working on looks and it's what's important to them, maybe that's a mismatch then, right? But yeah, then the delusion goes the other way, where you're like this really amazing person and you can't see it because you haven't dealt with your own insecurities. So you become your own obstacle, and, you know, and there we are.
Yeah. No. It's a great point. But how many of us are willing to do the real work of, you know, getting to know ourselves and getting to know the terrain, right? I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Who are we? Yeah. What do we want? And what's available out there? And how do we approach this? You know, and I think that when I think about this 30-year-old man, you know, I just went off on this. I'll send you the podcast link when it comes out.
Yes, I really want to hear it.
I mean, I get rowdy because they're like, they were like, the main title description of this podcast was, how do we find the ideal person for ourselves, right? And mm-hmm. I was like, for me, that ideal person has changed so many times throughout my life mm-hmm. because of who I was. So, you know, there's sometimes where people like me are constantly changing what their ideals are because of, you know, the growth mm-hmm. or, you know, and how far back yeah. I actually started as a man. I was only into dating white women for, you know, mm-hmm. from 17 to 32. That's all I was mm-hmm. obsessed with. And, you know, I looked at Asian women like my sisters, but I would still date Asian women. But then I realized like the reason I dated Asian white women was because of the lack of confidence that I had of who I was. So the ideals of a person is constantly changing. And if we don't account for those changes, a lot of dangerous things can happen to us. Like it happened to me. I just found myself in this pattern of like dating just so many people because of the insecurity driving who I was. Yeah. And,
That's really good insight, because I think there's two things there, because the number one thing that you said was how much are we willing to do, you know, how much work are we willing to do on ourselves? Yeah. How much work are you willing to do on yourself to actually understand who you are? And it's not about having to have healed already to be ready for a relationship. It's about knowing that if you don't do the work on you, you might not be prepared to do the work that it takes to be in a relationship. Because if you can't do work mm-hmm. when there's just one person in the room and that's just you, how are you going to do the work that needs to be done when there's two people in the room? And the complexity of the work that needs to be done isn't just like, you know, it's not times two, it's exponential growth, right? Because it's so many layers of like everything that people bring with them, that if you can't commit to you, can you commit to somebody else? So that's number one big, big question to ask yourself before dating. And if you're seeking a real relationship, like not just casual dating. And number two, what you mentioned was how do you evolve when the ideal person in your head changes? So how can you have the right person if that, you know, a goalpost is constantly moving? But I think that's where the core values come in and why they're so important. Because I think I can bet that your core values, most of them probably since you were a kid till now, they probably haven't changed that much. Everything else around you probably changed a lot, but the core values that, you know, are important to you, maybe values like family, you know, values like, I don't know, intellectual development or stuff like that, probably has been a constant in your life in some way or other. Maybe how much importance they had, the levels probably have changed, but they probably remained the same core values. So I think that's why the system that I set up is so based on core values and understanding your own core values. Because in the 6 years that me and my husband have been together, I have definitely changed. I mean, the person he started dating was a lot younger, and I was, working in corporate. I was chasing, you know, specific goals that I thought were what I wanted. And now a lot of that has changed. And I think the reason it works for us is because both of our core values and our life missions have remained the same. So even though the way we approach it is different, the river flows the same way. So it works that way. So I think that's why it's so important to find someone who will, you know, like really get your core, and then everything else is just evolution, right? And you're just like upgrading your Pokemon status. So
if you were to approach this 30-year-old man as a dating coach, what is the first thing that you would do?
Well, I would want to understand more about what's going on inside their head, because just because we've spoken to his dad, right? Like what you've spoken to his dad, and you know what this somebody from the outside is telling you, doesn't mean we actually understand what's going on inside of him. So I'd love to know everything that is sitting inside his brain that has to do with him, his self-esteem, what he wants out of life, where he sees he is at now, where he sees he wants to go further. what he thinks he's missing, what he thinks the ideal person is for him, how many dates he's actually ever been on, how many attempts has he actually done, what were those attempts, you know, where were those attempts, did he use any platforms, was it in real life, like, what has he actually, you know, what's the whole picture of this person before making any judgment, because we're all just seeking belonging. Like, all of us just want to belong, right? And having someone in a relationship with you is just having a smaller village, right? And that's a go-to person. And that, like, the person you end up with should be your best friend. And it should be someone you feel so safe to be with in any way, shape, or form. And it sounds so idealistic and very, like, Nancy Meyers movie, but it's true, like, you should be your complete full self with this person and feel safe to be that, and that person should encourage you to do that, right? So before you get there,
but what if they're so delusional in what they answer to you, Ola? What if it's so beyond what you can fix? And I have a suspicion a lot of men and women are like that today. I mean, I've run into a lot of people that are like that. And, you know, obviously I haven't had the training and the ability to ask the questions that you're just proposing. Hey, these are the things I'll do my due diligence with this person, get to know them. But I have a feeling a lot of them are so awkward and have the idea of who the ideal person is. Because even somebody like me has a delusional way of looking at who I think my partner is. I don't think I'm normal, but I think I'm relatively within the bounds of like somebody who's been in relationships before and being married. Yeah. But even I would even say somebody like me is, you know, has these grand ideas of what a relationship or a woman that I want to be with. I can't imagine.
Tell me your ideal. Tell me right now. Okay, this is your vulnerable moment.
Okay. Oh, this is crazy. Let me hear it. You know, I don't mind sharing because I've shared this in Vietnamese.
Wait,
on
Bala. I have to ask. Well, you're single right now, right?
Yeah, so I'm single.
This is a PSA, okay? Ken is putting himself out there. Let's do it.
I value, you know, in Vietnamese we call it kiến thức, right? General knowledge more than probably anything. Of course, it's general knowledge and a physical beauty that have to go hand in hand for me. It has to have physical attraction. But I think for me, kiến thức and kindness are the two things that are probably the most important thing. General knowledge, my co-hosts were asking me, like, you know, like, what do you put on a profile, you know? And for me, it's like a few lines that are subtle. And if somebody gets it, then they get it and vice versa. If I read something, what really turns me off is like, oh, I demand intentionality. I want this. Stuff kills me. Like when I'm on dating profiles and I read that, I just scroll. I can't deal with somebody who's so obviously wanting intention and a long-term relationship. I'm like, all of those are so tam thương, right? It's just so normal to me. I want something that is just subtle and that can, you know, women that can really cover the gamut of just intelligent conversation. That's probably one of my biggest.
Okay. So interesting that you brought up what to put on the profile, which I want to get to. But I think what you've been describing and the profile you have, how successful were you in finding what you were seeking?
I don't think that I'm on the dating apps for a long time. Enough. Haven't spent enough time on it to claim that I know enough about what is working and what's not working.
It's a fun
distraction so far, but I think we're coming up on a year. But, you know, I've been in different situationships throughout the year, so.
This is, you guys, you're getting the unfiltered Ken here. So. any intelligent ladies out there want to jump in, okay? But I think...
We're doing a live coaching right now. Ola is coaching me to go through this. The title is Do Women Need Men Anymore?
No, this is friendly advice. This is not, I'm not.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan. The sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows. The feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together, we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are, untouched, unfiltered. They're human, so don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com.
But it's interesting you brought up the profile because what I found when I first downloaded Tinder, I mean, I was petrified. It was like a meat market. And I told you last time, like I missed that boat, right? Because yeah. I had been in a really long-term serious relationship. So when the online dating started, like I was not seeking. So I completely didn't know what it was. So when I downloaded it, I mean, and men put crazy stuff on Tinder. Like, my goodness. I mean, it's not the kind of stuff you show to your mother, you know? And so I, which funnily enough, I did put my mom on Tinder at one point, which is another story. My almost 17-year-old mom.
How old is your mom? Bless almost what?
Right? Almost 70-year-old. Oh, so bless so her heart. And she goes through a lot of crazy stuff with me. So yeah, anyway, so when I saw that, I deleted the app immediately. But like I told you, I was like, I feel like I need to challenge myself. So I actually did this marketing A/B testing thing on my profile. So I don't know if we spoke about it last time, but I had like a set of pictures A, description A, set of pictures B, description B, set of pictures C, description C. So I would mix and match and like iterate until I found that the people swiping right on me were finally filtering out to the kind of people I was after. So I used my profile already as the first filtering system. And I used to get about 6,000 likes every 3 weeks. So it was just like a lot, like the volume of it was freaking insane, right? Like the volume is like the amount of time I put in every single day to go through that. And I would spend on average 90 minutes on the app a day just to be like, okay, this is a job, right? You just need to treat it like, because it's got to be scientific. So you have to like do it the same amount of time and, you know, put in the work. And it took me a while to finally get to the right description and the right amount, the right types of photos. And I found for me, because I was seeking a specific type of person that outside of the core values that I wanted, one of the traits I really wanted was someone who has the ability to not take things so seriously. Like, don't take life so seriously. Like, life is so short. And if you take everything super seriously, it becomes very long in a very bad way, you know? Yeah. So I wanted someone who would have like a really positive outlook on life and be able to just laugh at stuff. Because when you can find laughter, even in things that aren't great, I think it speaks for a certain type of person that deals with problems in a certain way. Like they problem solve in a different way because they're able to step outside of their own mindset, right? Like or at least that was my theory. That was my working theory.
Yeah, yeah.
And I ended up proving it because then that iteration of the pictures and description found my husband. So one of the biggest differences in the filtering system was that I put a picture of my self skydiving. And most people, when they skydive, are cool as shit. Like, they are so cool, right? And I did this in Mexico, just above a beach, like stunning views. But I look like I'm both constipated and have diarrhea at the same time on that photo.
Makes sense. I get it.
all-time favorite pictures of myself because I'm like, if someone can swipe right on a picture of me like that, they are looking beyond the things that you know, we're putting out there. So I intentionally made my profile not so sexy, not so pretty, right? Like, there was a picture of me that looked like, this is what I look like. And then there was just a balance of other things that were important in my life. And then that picture, once I put that picture and had the right description, I was like, wow, the difference in the swipes that I was getting. Like, I was like, this is it. I unlocked something. Like, the people that I was starting to have conversations with, the conversations were so much more interesting, so much more fun. There was like great banter that would come with it. And yeah, a lot more intellectually challenging and just, you know, who knew?
I need my diarrhea face picture up on.
We need to do a profile audit. So yeah, we're going to audit the profile.
Yes, okay? Yes. I would love that. Because all of my pictures are like a professional photographer. And so all six shots are like, Ken. Yeah.
If I was dating and I would see that, I'd be like an immediate no.
Why?
I'd be like, why is he taking himself so seriously? Come on. We got to find your real Ken in his moment, in his, you know, moment when
I have those pictures.
You.
I have them.
Yeah,
I have
just them. Be you. Because people want to connect to someone real, right? Because when they also, like, think about it, like, when you put pictures up there that are so, like, that are professional and they make you look good, it also means the other person's like, oh, like, are they A, serious, and B, are they, like, too good maybe? Like, you know, you don't know what the other person's going through.
Right,
so I think you need to think about the communication that the pictures and the profile, you know, they're doing work for you, right? They're communicating something. And what is it that they're communicating? Because it's all marketing. What is the message you're trying to put out there?
You know, what's crazy is 30 years ago, not only were we not dealing with dating apps, but we weren't even thinking about like how to perfect and improve our communication with the opposite sex or whoever, you know, if you're the other person, if you're gay.
Yeah.
You know, we're not even thinking about any of these things. We're just like existing maybe 50 years ago. 50 years ago, I don't think anybody was like really thinking this long and hard about. But now everything's more complex because of the accumulation of all these data points. And then on top of that, you know, adding our cultural values and sensitivities on top of, you know, what we come into this Western world with. It's pretty insane talking about this stuff. And it's only getting more increasingly difficult.
Yeah. And I love that you brought up communication because communication is my other obsession outside of love. And I think so much relies on communication. And I think I'm obsessed with communication because growing up, it was so hard to feel understood.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of our context, right? Like we're the Vietnamese or Asian person growing up abroad, and we're already different than the people that we see every day outside of the house. Then you come back home and you're not like the people in your home either, because now you've had all the exposure to the West outside of your home. So you're already struggling. And then the language aspect of it, I mean, I didn't start learning Vietnamese until I was 10. And for a very long time, my Vietnamese was very bad. So I had for the longest time the fear that my parents would pass away never knowing who I am. And it felt so tragic and just kind of sad that the closest people in your life would never know you, or that you would never know them, right? Because there's like a million questions that I want to ask my parents, and I want to know. And I did a podcast a while back with my mom where I asked her about all her loves and, you know, and why she chose my dad. Why did she get divorced? Like, why did she stay with him? Like all these things, because I was like, if we were friends, I would have asked her that, right?
Yeah, totally.
And so I was curious, and I was so grateful that she actually wanted to share all that stuff with me. I haven't been able to do that with my dad yet. I think it will take a while maybe to break down the walls. You know, traditional Vietnamese man from the 50s is a very different subject.
You got to do it soon because,
I know, time's ticking. But the subject of communication, like, what else is there that's more human than the the act of communicating. And we communicate in so many ways. And I was watching this like video about jewelry being used as a form of communication in like ancient times, like different stones, different shapes of things would communicate different things, like someone being single, someone being married, someone, you know, like status. And like, and in even in ancient times, like before we had all the languages we have today, like there was already so much communication and trying to connect with the other person and trying to exist in the same reality, because that's what communicating is, right? It's like trying to be like, how can I translate my world into words that you understand to for you to understand what I'm living and live in it together.
And that goes back to our title, Why Women Don't Need Men Anymore. I mean, men already, you know, we're wired, we're hardwired to not want to communicate. You know, I'm different. I'm the anomaly. I over communicate. But I think for most men,
did you hear that? You heard it here first. He over communicates. He's already selling himself to you guys.
I just think that this day and age, men are not equipped to really talk. We're just not. So now we're like at a more disadvantaged position, because not only are women really outperforming men, I mean, let's just be perfectly honest and open about this. Women are outperforming men, and now men are having to deal with this increased pressure to communicate and really open up and find ourselves like in this weird position that we have to like open up ourselves. It's very uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable, but I think, like anything that's uncomfortable, I think it's a nudge for change, right? It's a nudge for shedding the old and becoming the new. And I think if it doesn't happen, I mean, probably all the sperm banks in the world have enough sperm that women can just get pregnant without men for a long time.
No, also, I think it's true.
I feel like science is going there somehow that women will probably not need men in a biological sense, which is like the final tier of things, right? It's like, it's crazy if you think about it.
But you bring up a totally crazy valid point, is this. The top 5% of men on dating apps are getting all the traffic. And women, I don't think have that. There's not that issue for women, I think.
Yeah.
But I think for men, the top 5-10% of the food chain, the way they looked, what they're saying on the profile, they're getting 90%. I think of men have a very hard time on dating apps. This is what my anecdotal survey.
I like that. I like that you brought that up, and I think this would be my message to those men and also to the women on the apps, is what really makes a top 5 or 10% guy.
I can answer really that.
A top, right? Because height. What does
height? Okay. That's one of the big things. Height.
Yes, sure. Yes, height, sure. And I know there are a lot of women that want tall men, but that brings it back, right? The questions we were going to ask this 30-year-old kid, let's ask that same question to women, right? Because a lot of women say, well, they can't meet the right person, but what are they really looking for? What do they actually want? And then what do they end up swiping right on? Because if they swipe right on someone who's just tall and good looking, instead of actually swiping right on someone who's maybe short, but actually has the same core values as them, then they're the ones missing out. So that's my note to the women, because I know I was trapped in the same thing when I was swiping on the wrong people. And I in real life swiped on the wrong people for 30 years, right? Like all the wrong things mattered to me for 30 years until I really sat down and thought to myself, what the hell is it that I actually want? And how ready am I to do the work towards that, right? And I ended up bringing my full self to every single date that I went on, with short men as well, and swiping right on shorter men, because I was like, what? It's crazy. You're looking for something that's so much more than the thing that's on the outside, but somehow you're letting the judgment of what's on the outside dictate the rest of your life. Come on. Like, that's not, we need a better way of approaching it.
It's so easy in theory. It's so easy.
So easy in theory. I know.
It's so easy in theory.
And it takes work because when I went dating, I call myself a sapiosexual. So
me
like
too. That I'm that's the first thing.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Like I'm attracted to intelligence and intellect, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I went on all these dates in those 46 dates with a lot of men from Ivy League schools. Some of them double Ivies, very impressive resumes, very good looking. Some of them, you know, da 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 da, good families, whatever. Top 5-10% of dating apps, you'd think, right? My goodness, some of the dates, like I have never been that bored in my life, or completely different core values. Like I love a man that understands hard work. I mean, I love any human that understands hard work, like that understands the diligence it takes to build something real, like that puts their head down without recognition for a really long time to achieve something, which is so different than ambition, right? Those are two very different things. And I realized, even though these people would seemingly, in my head, I thought, oh, if someone goes to an Ivy League, they must be a hard worker and appreciate hard work, right? Some of these people, not taking it away from them, they definitely did their hard work, but I realized they judged other people that maybe worked hard. So they judged them according to status. And I was like, whoa, that's so far from what I appreciate. Because to me, I don't care if you're rich or not rich, or if you come from a good family or whatever status you hold, you know, in the made up thing that we've created in society versus someone who's just diligent, right? Just, it doesn't matter. They're just diligent. That's like a really respectable trait for me, at least. So yeah, some of these dates I would sit there and I'd be like, learning about myself, right? And I still had to be present and I still had to bring 100% me to then prove to myself, okay, you gave it your all and this is not the right person. But just realizing on those dates, like this is not who I'm after. So the five top 10% on these apps, is it my top 5 or 10%? And if it's not, then what really is my top 5 or 10% that I'm seeking, right?
See, but you've put a lot of time thinking about this stuff. Most people are falling into regular habits, you know? Most women are looking for the height first. That's probably like the biggest thing. Just like men, most men are looking for the most beautiful women. And that's just sort of like the way we're organized. It's just such a...
Question for you then, Ken. If that's most men and most women, then why not become not most men and not go for the most women that seek those things?
Because
right?
most people don't think like what you're saying. Look,
well, then you have
to go find
the gem. Go find the gem.
I might have to take off my height. I need to take off my height on the dating apps because I have an unfair advantage. I'm 6 foot tall. So I need to take that down in order to level the playing field, find the gem. Yeah.
That
and then I have to take down some of the pictures because I have to do my skydiving diarrhea face pictures.
just like real, you know, like realness, show realness, show who you are so that that the person that you're seeking can actually connect to it. Because I think it's so easy. I mean, the first batch of pictures I put, I was like, you know, me traveling, me in a bikini, me like, and then I was like, what kind of people am I trying to attract?
Attracting. Yeah.
Like what was I? And of course you want to feel good about yourself. And I think that's part of the apps is that when you get the swipes and people are matching with you, you're like getting the dopamine kick, right? And for an ADHD brain, this is like as good as buncha, right? You're like, yes, but no, that's not what you want. Like as I was whittling down, you know, filtering down the things, I was getting less matches, but they were quality matches. And they were people I actually would have wanted to chat to outside or been friends with or, you know, and that's when I felt, ooh, I think I'm on the right track. And my husband, his first line on his profile was, hello, my little puffins. Who the hell puts that? It's brilliant. And I was like, hello, my little puffins. Like, what is this guy? And I was like, it's already like, this That's is not so a cute. Normal person. It's yeah. so sweet. And it's so like, and I was like, yeah, I want to chat with this guy. And in our first conversation, I mean, we chatted for ages. So, you know, immediate connection.
Can you ask him if I can take that line and put it on my profile?
you can pay him royalties.
Wait, he doesn't want those kind of royalties, though.
I'll tell him to work with you on your description.
Oh my god, yeah. What did he do right? No. I'm concerned for my son, my daughter. I think we're creating this, and it can't be stopped with technology. But we're creating a world where it's hyper leveraged. You know, with technology and algorithms, I think that eventually, I think it'll all like even out once the technology hits a plateau and that we can all figure out. You know, I've heard of this thing I was talking about on the podcast recently on Baola podcast that there is AI services like this platform called Amada. And your AI, their AI talks to each other and it just goes through all of the profiles and the AIs talk to each other. And then they finally go, oh, we found a big match. And now we are able to set you up for a date.
That's insane. I mean, that is insane because how are we outsourcing like love?
It's happening.
What? That's it. Okay. Interestingly enough, though. What I am seeing as a trend that's happening is that offline is becoming so important now. And so many people are starting to seek offline. And I think it gives me hope. It gives me so much hope for the younger generation because my daughter is only one. So God knows what's going to happen by the time she's ready to date. But what I am seeing is that people are definitely turning toward offline a lot more, so running clubs, you know, or supper clubs, anything that like people can just hang out with each other is becoming really hot in business and in startups and stuff like that. So that's really cool to see. And second thing is in Vietnam, I saw, gosh, I can't remember the name of their service, but I saw there's a speed dating service that just started, and they help match people as well. And I was like, wow, this is like, we've gone back, but actually how great is that? Because people get to meet each other in real life again and talk and connect and just, you know, take off the marketing of it all. Like I hated that I had to do marketing. I hated it. I wanted, you know, I told you this, like I wanted to go to a tile shop in Sicily and just have someone reach for the same tile. Like I wanted romance and marketing and having to read my stats was like anything but romantic. Right. So, but I leveraged it and you can leverage this system toward your own thing. But yeah, I'm really glad to see that more is headed towards human connection again. So hopefully, I mean, how old are your kids? Hopefully,
yeah, they're 7 and 9.
But, hopefully, you know, by the time they're old enough, it will be more of that.
We talked about how previous generations of Vietnamese people have really killed the dating situation inside of their children. They're always like, you know, no, wait till high school to date. No, wait till college. No, wait till you get the job. And then all of those years that you're supposed to be learning how to date and the muscles that you need to develop are gone. Yes. They're obliterated. They've atrophied and you don't have that ability to kind of like figure out the whole dating schematic. And you find yourself like in the job force with an inability to connect with. And I think that that's happened to a lot of Vietnamese kids that grow up inside Vietnamese culture.
Yeah, completely. You're so right. And also the difference between how boys.
Yeah.
Right? The boys are allowed to date, but the girls are not. And so the girls are the ones that need more protection, right? The girls are the ones that need more help in distinguishing the right partner because, you know, according to their language, there's more to lose, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, but then you don't allow the girls to date, but you want the boys to date. But then who are the boys dating then if the girls are not allowed to date? like, you know, what a crazy, crazy setup.
Exactly.
So I definitely see that. And I mean, I've seen my brother's kids, because my brother's a lot older than me. And so his kids are already, one of the kids is already in uni. And he was allowed to date already since he was like 14, 15. So he's been like having girlfriends and stuff. And the parents are really supportive of it. And I was always the one on call if he had a question, like, oh, you know, like, what should I do if I want to take a girl to the cinema? Or like, what should I do if we're going to a party? Or like, what should, you know, like all these questions he would have. Or the first fights he had, like, I was very fortunate to be his trusted person to call and ask, you know, how do I solve this fight? Like, what do I do if she's mad at me about this? And being able to also be the voice of reason and say, but did you think about how she's thinking? You know, like what she's feeling? Have you thought about how she's feeling in this situation? Outside of the fact that you might feel hurt, like, did you think about the fact that she might be feeling hurt, you know? So, you know, helping him navigate, what does it mean to be a healthy, in a healthy relationship as a good boyfriend, right? Like, what does it mean to be a good partner as well? So I'm so glad that his parents allowed him to explore. And then I'm glad that he was able to open up to us about all of it because he felt comfortable. But I feel like his sister, who's now next year going to uni, didn't get the same thing.
Wow.
So I struggle a lot more to and I've had conversations with her where I'm like, do you like any boys? You know, is there, and I can sense that she's really scared to say anything because I think her parents, you know, that, you know, they don't want her to date because they're like, well, you can date later because now it's time to focus on studying. Oof. So I'm like, well, that means you don't get to really, yeah, like you said, practice.
Grow.
And
yeah.
Grow and do what everybody else does, you know, with being a teenager, doing stupid things, you know, that then teach you to not do stupid things. So it's a total pity.
It's so unfair. It really is unfair. I don't know if we answered the question, do women need men anymore?
Away from it.
Yeah. You know, we're going to pick up that answer in the next episode. You know, you have like a ton of business knowledge and ideas about the workplace that you actually talk about so much. And we haven't even gotten to it, but I feel like this whole dating thing and the outside world of men and women and dating apps, we're just scratching the surface, and I think that we should pick it up some more because there's still some uncovered questions that I have.
You know, I'm there for it. I mean, my husband and I can spend, you know, 6 hours, you know, a night talking about humans and connection. So I love this subject, and I'm very grateful that you let me talk about it.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, you talked about coaching, and you talked about, you know, if this young man is not able to kind of figure it out with his father, you know, this is something, are you offering this publicly? Are you, what is this, something that
I hate the word coach. Yeah. I don't know why. I think it just has weird connotations, but I I'm very open with people on my channels as well. I'm like, I'm not a therapist. I'm not an expert in anything. I just have spent over 2,000 hours in therapy, and I am deeply interested in this subject, and I have a lot of experience with different things. So I share that experience, and I think the main thing that it comes down to, and I do offer services in different areas, including relationships, but also like work and other spaces.
It's all communication.
It's all connected. It's all communication. And more importantly, it's all mindset. It's all sitting within who you are and your mindset towards you and towards the world. And once you can like have that work for you, things just click into place. And like suddenly you see like, oh, the things I want, they're just there for me to get. Like it just becomes second nature, right? And when you learn how to tune up your metacognition, you know, like start thinking about thinking. Don't just think about how you think, you know, and start like working on your neuroplasticity, you know, like how much are you working on your brain to work differently? Like all those things, they're so interrelated into who you are out there in the world, whether it is in work relationships, you know, love relationships, all of that. And yes, I have a workshop coming up, which I'm shamelessly plugging, but it is at the end of 21st of August. So that's actually the first workshop that I'm running on mindset, and it is about the mindset of dating and doing a workshop on love, specifically on how to date and the system that I had and how people can customize that system for them. And you know, Ken, join the workshop, man.
Look, the next episode we do with in a few weeks should be how to date. Is that simple? How to date. And then we can shamelessly plug your workshop. I think it's great. How to date. That will be the next one. So stay tuned. Ola, thank you so much for today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. As usual, a great chat.
Always. Thank you, Ola.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.